We know what we think. What do you think? Call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Yeah. Pacome Dottier. Championship. Woo! How we doing at 304? Mick Monagle here with you. Right here on the Fan. You just heard it there. The Knicks bring back OG Anunoby the day after making the trade for Bridges. I mean, boom, 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 boom. Leon Rose, does the man sleep? I know he doesn't do TV interviews, so that frees up a lot of time, but I'm not sure if the man sleeps. As right now, I said it yesterday, as much as I love Brian Cashman, you know I love me some Brian Cashman. Right now, Leon Rose is just running away with the best executive in this town. I mean, he's just done an incredible job. An incredible job. And to bring back OG Anunoby, look, it's a lot of money. $40-plus million, 5 years for $212. It's a lot of money. But I think we saw what OG can be. And we saw how he transformed this team. And now all the different two-way playing wings that this team has, I mean, they're going to have to figure out the center position. I don't know if it's Mitch Robinson. It doesn't sound like it's Hartenstein. You know, the roster isn't complete. But, I mean, I think they've done a remarkable job. And to bring OG back was the linchpin. And you knew when they made the trade for Bridges that it almost doesn't make sense if they don't bring back OG Anunoby. Like him instead of OG Anunoby, it's not the same. It doesn't put them in the same category that we were looking to put them in. So, I mean, that's a big signing. He decides to come back. It sounded like he could have got max contract money elsewhere, chose to come back to the Knicks. We'll see if it's even plausible to have Hartenstein do something similar, because I would love to bring Hartenstein back. Especially with this team and the amount of scorers and wing shooters, to be able to have his offensive skill set, to have his passing game, would really help this team immensely. But they're going to have to figure it out. But right now, and then you get into the draft, they're wheeling and dealing. They trade the 24th pick for the 26th pick. They draft Pacome Dottier 25th overall. Then they trade away the 26th pick for, what, 5 second-round picks? I mean, just Leon Rose is wheeling and dealing. He ain't sitting on the sideline for any of this stuff. And, you know, the draft, I heard Al and Jerry talking about it yesterday. Yeah, no buzz. Absolutely none. I don't know if anybody cared about the NBA draft. There wasn't really any major players. What, they get 4 players drafted from France in the first round. One of them, obviously, Pacome Dottier by the New York Knicks. So, I mean, we'll see. Hopefully he's a good, you know, hopefully he becomes a rotation piece on this team and helps them. But right now, the rest of this roster feels pretty damn good. And to bring back OG Anunoby, it feels like, let's go. I mean, it's the same team in January. It's the January Knicks plus Mikal Bridges. And I'll tell you this. I don't think there is not going to be, as we are all hyped about the Subway Series, and certainly Met fans are all hyped about the Met fans, and Yankee fans are all hyped that hopefully this will at least be the end of Boone and Cashman. I don't know what else to be hyped about. I mean, they're only in first place. But I don't know if we'll ever be more hyped. When was the last time we were this hyped for the beginning of a Knicks season? Because last year, excited, thought the team would be a playoff team for sure. Had real hope that they could find themselves into the 4 or 5 seed and be a threat at least, and you would see some progression. But I don't think anybody, even the most pie-in-the-sky Knicks fan, felt like it was a real legitimate chance to be a championship contender. And whether or not they are, and whether or not the Knicks fans will be right in thinking they are, I think that will be the case. I think many Knicks fans, a lot of us here, we'll head into this season thinking, who, besides Boston, who's better than the New York Knicks? That is going to be the prevailing thought. This team is built now to try and defend and beat the Celtics. That's who they've decided, you know, that's the beast, that's the champion, that's the best team in the East, and that's who you're going to be measured against. And they went out and tried to form a team that's going to beat them. that can compete with them, can defend them, can defend all the shooters they have. And there's going to be some real excitement about this team, and Knicks Celtic games are going to be through the roof. Like, this is as much fun as we are going to have as Knicks fans in a long time. Excuse me. So I'm looking forward to it. That's right. The Knicks are back. We're going to have the Giants in the brand new off-season Hard Knocks. The Jets have a Hall of Fame quarterback and a young, talented roster and should be good. The New York Yankees are still in first place, but, you know, are the worst team in baseball, with ran by dopes and idiots. And the Mets are on fire. What a time to be alive. Is this Gregorio in Soho? Gregorio.
Chris, what's going
Gregorio,
on, my friend?
What's up, my friend?
I'd like to say one thing first and foremost. Okay. It is amazing to be on the show with the McMonagle Maniacs.
Okay.
I'd like to say that, number
the
one.
The McMonagle Maniacs, right. I like it. All I the like McMonagle that. Maniacs I, out there. The
Although
Lou Gowers seems to be like taking over the wrestling promo thing. So I don't want to get I don't want to get too close to doing a wrestling promo. It feels like
we all know you were the better of the two.
Oh, well,
We all know you were the better of the two.
Clearly.
My personal favorite.
Well, thank you so much.
Listen, so good, Chris, that I think the Brooklyn Nets used one of those picks to draft the McMonagle Maniacs.
Okay, that'd be fun. I'm open
absolutely.
To it.
So now, let's get down to business here. So, OG, I'm thinking the 5 years, $212 million, it's a little pricey. You take 180, maybe we get Hartenstein back. Hartenstein was amazing in the playoffs.
He was very good. He's not as important as OG Anunoby, though. I don't think. I think OG.
You think the shoulder will last?
Well, I mean, that's the question. You transitioned into the most. I mean, Hartenstein had his injuries too. He was dealing with an Achilles injury. He played through it a little bit better. He did take some time off, but he didn't have the long stretches of absence the way OG Anunoby did. But that's the question. Can OG stay healthy? But I don't think there's a doubt. If he does, he's a far more important player to this Knicks team than Hartenstein would be. I don't think there's any doubt. And he was gonna get a max contract. Hartenstein's going to get paid. And he's going to get money that is going to make the Knicks feel uncomfortable giving it to him. But he wasn't going to get a max contract. Anunoby's going to get a max contract. We'll talk about good in the playoffs. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'll let you finish. But Anunoby scored 28 points in 28 minutes. In a playoff game when they needed him, when Brunson went down and they needed him to score before hurting his hamstring, he scored 28 points in 28 minutes. His game is even better than it's been allowed to be so far. He's been so focused on being that perimeter defense guy that changes the way they play defense and maybe hit the spot up three occasionally. I think if needed, the ball in his hands trying to create some offense, he's even better than he's shown in his career. So I definitely think OG Anunoby is the more important player, and I'm thrilled they brought him back, even if it cost them Hartenstein.
During the trade deadline, I said no one needs a 3-and-D player more than the Knicks. They go and get Anunoby, who has, I wasn't familiar with his game,
yeah,
but succeeded all expectations.
No doubt.
And I think he's a great player. I just think 212 is too much money. I think
it's the richest contract.
Like,
yeah, I mean, it's the richest contract ever given to a New York Knicks. So it's a lot of money, no doubt. I was hoping to land more in the $36 to $38 million range than the $42 million range. I agree. But it's what the market dictated. He was going to get more. He turned down more money. He was going to get a max contract. That's what he's thought of inside the NBA circles. So, I mean, he's an important piece. We've already seen what he turns the team into. He transformed the team. Like, sometimes you got to just look at what you're seeing, even on, you know, even if you think it's a lot of money, or even if you think he's injured a bit, or his game is lacking and he doesn't bring the passing ability of Hartenstein, or whatever the case may be. He transformed the team. Hartenstein was important, and he was a better bench player and a backup center than we thought when Mitchell went down, but he came here and instantly transformed the team. Those are things you can't ignore. You can't ignore that. And if they're going to go all in and make a trade and give up 6 first-round picks for what all of a sudden... And here's the other thing, too, about Mikal Bridges. I know he's never been an all-star, and I know he's not a superstar. But when discussion was going on before the trade, when people were saying, like Evan Roberts and everybody else, and I'm not to single out Evan Roberts, but everybody, Keith McPherson, and just anyone in the media, oh, there's no way they'll trade Mikal Bridges to the Knicks. There's no way. I mean, he's the final piece. He's a great player. You have to give me back an all-star. You have to give me back, you know, at least Randall plus tons of picks. They're asking, apparently, according to Windhorse, they were asking for 6 first-round picks when his name was being discussed in trades. They turned down a pretty good offer earlier in the season for him. And everybody talked about, oh, he's the final piece. Oh, he's so great. His ability, to, you know, the two-way player, his ability to shoot and score. Oh, he's gonna, you know, he's been he's been great, not a superstar, but he's been great coming over to the Knicks. He's Nets. He's really established himself as a scorer. Blah, blah, blah. Now all of a sudden the trade's made, and it's like, well, he's a very, very good role player. Like now all of a sudden he's an excellent role player. Like now, while he will play and have a role, I don't know if I would call him a role player. Yes, he's not the number one. Yes, when Randall's healthy, he's not even the number two. But if you want, if that automatically makes you a role player, would we have called Chris Bosh a role player because he played with LeBron and Wade, and he was their third option? Is that a role player? If Chris Bosh is a very good role player, then sure. Bridges can be a very good role player. But I view him a hell of a lot more than that. And quite honestly, when everybody was telling me there's no way they'd give him to the Knicks, I think he was kind of discussed as more than that. But now that the trade's been made, well, he's just a very... You gave up 5 first-round picks for a very good role player. All of a sudden, we've changed his designation. David in Corum. What's up, David?
Hey, what's going on, Christopher?
What's going on there, David?
First, a comment.
I can talk to the best of them. What do you got?
I've watched you ascend into successfulness, and I really think the sky's the limit for you. I think you're going to be wonderful, and I wish you and your family all the best.
Well, that's very kind of you. I look at these. All I got to do is do one, you know, positive Met open, and suddenly I'm getting all these compliments.
No, I thought. Listen, I'm addicted to sports radio,
yes.
So I listen to every night.
Basically. Oh well, thank you very much.
My first point is I agree with you wholeheartedly about the Mets hitting the 500 mark,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just beating the Yankees. I'm not going to lie to you and your audience and tell you that.
Oh, it feels good.
It didn't feel good to beat the older brother.
It feels great, no doubt. But it's not as important.
It's not as important as reading that 500 mark.
100%.
At all.
Yeah, I'm with you. That was the takeaway. That's why I went back to the day I called them dead a month ago. That's why I went back in the open and talked about how they were 11 games under 500 at that point. Like, today seemed like the culmination of this resurgence and this hot streak that has brought them back to 500 more than it felt like, hey, did you see them take Luis Gil deep opposite field? Like, yes, nice. Great.
Yeah,
I'm sure it felt great. The stadium was rocking. No doubt you took down the Yankees. And this isn't me as a Yankee fan trying to minimize it. I'm not. This was a big game and a big series, and they kicked the Yankees' ass in every way, shape, and form. But leaving the game, it felt more like, okay, now you could talk about who the Mets are. They're 500. They've come back. They have the best record in baseball in June, and they have absolutely dominated good starting pitching, and they have, within 3 weeks, evaporated 11 games and got right back to 500 and now are ready to make a move. And I felt like that's really the story coming out of this, is these two games put the Mets on the map. 500, beating everybody, including the big bad Yankees, or at least they were perceived to be the big bad Yankees, and older brother and all that, and beat their two best starting pitchers. When all said and done, I think everyone expects Cole and Luis Gil to be their two best starting pitchers, and they just absolutely bombarded them and got to a point where the Yankees' offense, as inept as it was, didn't have a chance to win the game.
My last point, my last is actually a question to you, because you know about more about sports than I ever will.
Well,
do you think I'm going to be calling you more often. So McNeil.
Yes.
So correct me if I'm wrong. Did he win a
batting title
2 years ago?
He certainly did.
So it's in him. What do you think is going on with him, and do you think that he is starting to come out of that? do you think pitchers figured him out? Like, the pitching coaches were like, he doesn't like the ball there.
Yeah.
He doesn't like it there.
Well, let's go over it a little bit then, and Dave.
Okay.
There's a couple of things. One, there's the narrative that the rule change and the shifting change hurt him, that he was profoundly good at finding the holes in the overshifts, and that led to a lot of it. I think that's overblown, but there's probably something to it. I think if you watch him, he's popping up everything. I think he's in a funk and just...
He looks frustrated at the plate.
That's the other thing, too. As much as, like, he's almost the opposite of Gleyber Torres, where if you saw Gleyber in the dugout yesterday, he's moping. He's sad. He looked just dejected and sad and moping. And I think the opposite of McNeil, where his frustration level hinders him. Some guys get pissed off and play better. There are some guys who feed off that. There are some guys who thrive on being angry and pissed off at themselves. Paul O'Neill was a guy like that. And thank you for the call, David. Paul O'Neill was a guy who would get frustrated with himself. And, I mean, I'm sure on some level, on some occasions, it hindered him. But he was a guy that thrived on it. He beat up the water cooler. He would work on his stance in the outfield. He would be frustrated and could thrive on that kind of thing. And it would make him better. It would piss him off and make him better. There are guys who are like that. And then there are guys who, like McNeil, in my opinion, get mad, get frustrated, throw their helmet at every turn, constantly arguing calls, where it hinders their ability. And I don't know if that's strictly it, but I think it's led to some bad behavior, bad habits. And I think right now, fundamentally, he's just, his swing looks awful to me. He had a couple better swings in this game. In this series, he had two hits the other night. Sacrifice fly in this game on an 0-2 pitch that was left up a little too high. But ultimately, I see his torso and his ass go one way and his arms go the other a lot. He pops up everything. It's almost as if he's got this MO where it's just bat to ball and we'll find a way. And it doesn't look like he really takes good, powerful, drive the ball type swings. I don't know. It's hard to say exactly what's the issue with him. But the difference for me between whether or not you can have some faith in maybe a Gleyber Torres, for example, coming back as opposed to Jeff McNeil is just the amount of time they've struggled. Jeff McNeil has been a full year and a half. Jeff McNeil was awful last year. It is a full year and a half of Jeff McNeil being terrible. Same reason I'm concerned about, you know, other players, but why I still look at a Gleyber Torres who had an 800 OPS last year and was the Yankees' most consistent hitter and had 25 home runs. He's shown me within the last calendar year being a good player. Same thing with DJ LeMahieu. Last year in the second half, 800 OPS. Now, I'm a little more concerned with him because he's been unable to deal with any kind of injury and battle through it, where if he's not feeling 100%, he can't battle through. He's too old. He's too tired. His foot hurts too much, whatever the case may be. But I still have a little bit of faith in Gleyber, and I'm surprised. I want to get on Yankee fans for something because it's almost like we're so mad at Gleyber, and we're so frustrated with Gleyber, and I get it. I'm mad at Gleyber, and I'm frustrated with Gleyber. But it's almost gotten to the point with him where it's unacceptable to root for him when you know they're going to play him, and you know there's really no better option. Like, and that's the other thing with Jeff McNeil, too. Iglesias has come up and played well. I'm not saying cut him. I'm saying bench him because Iglesias has played well enough to earn the position. And if 3 weeks from now and Iglesias is 0 for his last 35, then throw Jeff McNeil back out there. But right now there's a legitimate option of someone to play second base and who has legitimately done a better job. I don't know the options. You want to play Cabrera for a while? I think they're going to. And we'll see if Cabrera runs with the position. But Gleyber Torres is a 27-year-old kid who had a 800 on base percentage last year, and I still think is their best option if they could get him going. So as much as I like the idea of benching him, I liked it partially because it was punishment, partially because it's holding him accountable for not hustling, but also because I think he might just need the freaking time to get his head cleared, and hopefully he can come back and play better, because ultimately that's what I'm rooting for. And I'm tired of being scolded by angry, pissed off Yankee fans for rooting for Yankees who I know they're going to play. And I know that the Yankees need, especially with right now, the rest of this offense playing like dog crap. Like, I don't understand. Gleyber Torres is still someone who just last year had an 800 OPS and was their best hitter. Hit 25 home runs just last year. And I don't think they have better options until you get to the trade deadline. So excuse me if I'm still going to like be in his corner and hope he can turn this thing around as opposed to just going, I hate the guy, get him off my team. I'm not getting on you for having that comment. That's fine. You want to treat it like that? Fine. I know they're not going to do it. I know they need him, when, especially against left-handed pitching. So when I look at him moping in the dugout, I'm like, I hope he gets his head right. Instead of, get the hell out of here, you lazy bum. You want to have the get the hell out of here, you lazy bum? Fine. Fine. And the minute they have a better option, I'll join you. But the anybody but Gleyber Torres train, I'm not on board. Because anybody's not necessarily better than Gleyber, or doesn't have the opportunity to get back to being a player that Gleyber can get to. I still feel that way. As frustrated as I am with him. Thomas in Staten Island. What's up, Tom?
Hey, so, hey, Chris.
Hi.
I have a question about Julius Randle that I want to get your thoughts on.
Sure.
What his future is. I feel like a lot of Knicks fans expected the biggest, like, Knicks move so far to be, or at least their first move, was to be to get, like, a second option behind Brunson.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe, like, a Paul George, a Devin Booker, et cetera. And with this trade for Mikal Bridges, do you think this is a sign that the Knicks are basically saying, like, Randle's our second option now, and that's who they're going with?
I don't know if it's sending a sign that says Randle is our second option no matter what. Because if Mikal Bridges plays his way into it or Randle. But, yeah, I mean, to answer your question plainly, in some way I do believe that it had less to do with that. I don't think that's why they did it. I don't think they were out there looking for someone who they could trade, improve, and still call Randle their second. If there was an opportunity to get a player they felt fit great and was an option who would have been their second option, I think they would have done it. I think it's just like you. I mean, I don't know if Paul George is a fit. I don't know. I mean, and how long can you wait for the perfect fit? Like everybody last year, and there's a chance Embiid. Well, does Embiid really fit? Oh, Karl Anthony Towns. Oh, does Karl Anthony Towns really fit? Oh, but Booker's not going to come here. Even Durant, he's older. He's coming off, he's had an Achilles in his recent history. Like, there's always a reason why this one's not right and that one's not right. And, you know, Giannis or Luka aren't coming here. So at some point, they had to just get a player they felt dramatically improved them. I think they felt that he does. He fits into the team, the Villanova connection, all that, how important it is for team chemistry and what they've built there and the accountability that this team has held everyone else on it. And to add another Villanova guy and add another guy who's won a championship with them, another guy that gets right into that thing and gets into the coaching staff and can shoot the way he shoots, that they felt and deemed it was worthy of it. And because of who he is and the role he'll play on this team, it affords them to, still kind of consider Randle that second option. I think it's a happy accident, maybe. I don't think it's like, hey, let's go get someone so that who we know Randle will still be our guy. I don't think that was the design. It's what's happened, though.
So do you think this team is, like, complete, or do you think they're missing one more piece?
Nope. Listen, they got to find the center. You got to find who's playing center. Now, I mean, I don't know if it'll be Mitchell Robinson. Right now he's on the roster. I would prefer to trade Mitchell Robinson and sign Hartenstein. That's always what we've said. But now with the added dynamic of taking on the salary of Mikal Bridges, I don't know if that's plausible anymore. And now signing OG Anunoby to the $212 million over 5 years, I don't know if it's plausible anymore. But I don't know how I feel about Mitch. I like Mitch. He's a great rebounder, a good rim protector, and he was having a great year at the start of last year. But the main issue is he can't stay healthy. You want to talk about guys like Stanton? If the morning show is Eddie Scazzeri just walks in, hello, Eddie, how are you? Good to see you. Like, if the morning show wants to have a pool about injuries for Stanton, they can absolutely have one for OG Anunoby. There is no doubt. I'm sorry, excuse me, Mitchell Robinson. You could probably have one for OG too. But definitely Mitchell Robinson, you can have a pool on what muscle or bone he's going to break. There's no doubt about it. He's going to miss time. To quote the great Brian Cashman, it's in his game. So to automatically hand over the starting center to someone who gets injured, guaranteed for sure he's going to miss time. Doesn't have to be the whole year, but he's going to miss time. And then have OG Anunoby as well, who's kind of injury prone. That seems like 40% of a starting rotation at a starting team that I don't like the amount of time I expect them to be injured. So when I said it earlier, like a few days ago before the Mikal Bridges thing, and they were talking about bringing back OG Anunoby, I didn't love OG Anunoby and Mitchell Robinson on the same team. If that's a necessity because of the Mikal Bridges trade, then I'll live with it, but I don't like it. I would rather get somebody in here with a little bit more of an offensive game, a little bit of an ability to pass the basketball and play an inside-out game and, you know, create a double team and dish it, as well as a rim protector and a defender. I get how important Mitch is with that, but Hartenstein was able to come in, and I think the first game he played for the injured Mitch Robinson, he got 19 rebounds. I mean, that's what you're looking for. But I would like someone with a little bit more of an offensive game. But I think that's pretty much the roster, yeah. I think we've established the roster. It's going to be OG Anunoby. It's going to be Brunson and Randall, Bridges, OG Anunoby, DiVincenzo, Hart, McBride. And then a center. Whether it's Mitchell Robinson, whether it's Hartenstein or someone else. Like that's the rotation. That's the team. And it's pretty deep. And it's pretty good. And it's got every element of a team covered. I think that group right there defends like hell. I mean, I think off the you bring Hart and McBride off the bench, the second unit defends like hell. They've got shooters and DiVincenzo and McBride and obviously Brunson. OG can hit a corner three with the best of them. Like they can shoot and they can defend the perimeter as good as anyone in the league, and that's how you're going to beat Boston. So I think this is the team. I don't think there's anything else to do. To figure out who the five is. That is it. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. We'll come back. We've really been positive on the Mets. I want to still do that. I want to take your Mets phone calls because this is a big day for you. Make no mistake, as you head off into the day off, these 2 days off sandwiching the Yankee series, and now you take on the Houston Astros, the team that has pretty much owned baseball for the last decade, a team that's surging, a team that was off to a miserable start and has now worked their way back to 500 as well. But the Mets are 500. The Mets went into this Yankee series two games under with an ability to get back to 500 after dopes like me declaring them dead at 11 under just 3 weeks ago. And in that time, they have made up 11 games in the standings. They had seven teams in front of them on June 2nd. On June 2nd, when I declared them dead and had a little fun, you know, was an idiot and jumped a gun after losing the last two games of the Diamondback four-game set, they were 11 games under 500. They had seven teams in front of them, and they were five games behind the wild card. And as they sit today, they've made up all 11 games. They're exactly at 539-39. There's only one team in front of them. They are 1.5 games out of a wild card spot. And there's only the San Diego Padres ahead of them. That's it, who they swept earlier this month. The Met turnaround is far more impressive. The Met last 3 weeks is far more impressive than kicking the Yankees' ass, which they did by a mile. As much fun as you might be having with that, take a step back, zoom out, and look at where this Met team is overall and the radical change from where it was 3 weeks ago. Yeah, knocking Luis Gil out of the game, knocking Cole out of the game, scoring all these runs, adding tack on home runs from the bottom of the lineup, shutting down this Yankee team, watching them leave the bases loaded in both first innings of both of these games. All fun. Owning the night, having the fun at the Yankee fan expense, being able to show up to work tomorrow and wear your Met gear and really stick it to Ted in accounting. It's going to be a lot of fun. But what's more important is where this Met team is, how they're playing, how much ground they've made up, and how dangerous they've become inside the National League. And more important than any of that, the message they sent to this general manager and owner that you can't mess around. Help us. Help us. Because we're good enough and we deserve it. And gosh darn it, people like me.
Chargers and the New York Giants have exchanged their draft picks.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Eli Manning and Philip Rivers.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, let's go. 3:39, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Obviously a lot about the two stories have been over the last 2 days. Mets kicking the crap out of the Yankees and the Knicks making moves as they did sign Anunoby yesterday. Big contract, 5 years, $212 million. Obviously the day before they traded for Mikal Bridges, they drafted Pacome. I had it right, just the Dottier. There you go, I got it right. Pacome Dottier. Can't read my own handwriting. I thought it was a P for a second. Guard out of France, we'll see. No idea. Be the first to tell you, I have no idea. I can tell you the last time they drafted someone out of France, we didn't feel too good about it. So we'll see. We will see. But right now that this Nick team is going to have buzz around it, again, with the morning show, listen, it was Eddie still in there. Buzz, no buzz, this Nick season is going to have buzz. And right now this Met season has buzz as their offense is dominant, home runs from the bottom of the lineup, pounding good pitching at every turn, whether it's against Dylan Cease in San Diego, whether it's against Imanaga in Chicago, whether it's against the two Yankee best starting pitchers, you know, theoretically, their two best starting pitching. Everywhere you turn, the Mets are beating up on a good starting pitcher and dominating. And both of these games got out of hand in the middle innings. Yes, game one got closer with the grand slam from Judge, who's unbelievable, hit another home run in this game. But besides him, the Yankees stink offensively. And the Mets just absolutely welcomed in the New York Yankees just to kick the tar out of them for 2 days and have thrusted themselves back to 500. And honestly, as it feels right now, and again, things can change because a month ago they felt dead to me. But as they feel right now, one of the more dangerous teams in the National League. Frank in Soho. What's up, Frank?
Hi, how's it going, Chris?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. You've been getting a lot of love tonight. I want to keep that rolling. I just want to say it's a pleasure listening to you every night.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, with that, Lindor, man, he's been playing great.
Yep.
Mets are on a hot streak. They brought it back up, the 500 season. Got that rolling. It's phenomenal. I'm really pumped about that. Let's keep it rolling into October.
Yeah, well, let's keep going, hopefully, yeah. And Lindor, I was just talking about this with Fliegelman. He was giving me stats. Lindor, since moving to the leadoff spot, has been, I mean, I got to look at the numbers overall, but I mean, you could argue this is one of his best stretches as a Met. I mean, that's how good he's been, and particularly getting on in the first inning. His on-base percentage is in, they were talking about on the broadcast. I was flipping back and forth. Mainly, I watched the Yankee broadcast. I'm a Yankee fan, I'll be honest with you. So I was watching, although I don't know who the best booth in the city is. I guess that came up yesterday, very concerned about who the best broadcast booth is, and I think even most Yankee fans would tell you that SMY has the best broadcast booth. But I will tell you, I don't want to upset people or make anybody upset, I will also tell you that I think the YES Network is a far better pre and post. All right, can we call that even? Ron, Keith, and Gary are the best broadcast booth, and YES Network does a much better job pre and post. Shake on it? Good. Big whoop. Want to fight about it? 888-808-1019. But apparently they talked about how Lindor's on-base percentage has been through the roof. I mean, that's really changed who they are. Yes, Alvarez coming back, no doubt. Yes, Vientos coming into his own, hitting bomb home runs, no doubt. Bader being clutch, whatever else you want to talk about. Nimmo kind of going on a hot streak after being cold for really most of the year. Finding his power stroke as well. All of those things have combined to give you this Met offense. But for me, I mean, you might have to put Lindor at the top of that. As much as we love Alvarez, those are the two you're competing with. Because Alvarez, you could argue, had the two biggest, had really two huge at-bats in both of these games. The home run yesterday to give them a 3-0 lead. He also walked again in the first inning. And I think the walk against Cole in the first inning yesterday, or 2 days ago in the first game, was enormous because he was 0-2, battled back to walk, made Cole throw all these pitches. He gives up the home run. He gives up the base hit to Taylor. That thankfully only scored one run when they threw out Alonso, but that was a huge at-bat. The walk in the first at-bat, this game not as big, but still good at-bats early on, and then he hits the 98-mile-an-hour fastball away over the fence. I mean, Alvarez has been great, but Lindor setting the table, and the stroke of genius from this manager it was to move him to when everybody, the whole point of Nimmo is to be a leadoff hitter. He's a Bill James wet dream. Like, he is an analytical phenom. Like, he gets on base. That's why everyone loves Nimmo, because of his analytics. Of all the secondary numbers, that's, and so leading him off has been their thing. It's what, you know, what he's meant to do. And to make that switch and put Lindor there to get him going dramatically changed this team and dramatically changed this offense. Yeah, give me the numbers, Fleegs. What the hell?
So the Lindor one, they said it on the broadcast. I forget, they were in the high 500s.
Okay.
This is just on base percentage leading off the game.
Leading off the game.
Is in the mid 500s, 19 for 34.
Wow.
In the 34 games.
Yeah.
And 15 of the last 23. And then Alvarez. You know the record for the Mets with Alvarez? 21-3 in the last 24 games
he's appeared in. That's incredible. That's incredible.
Now, also, it's 21-8 overall because the team started 0-5.
Right. Unbelievable.
21-3 in the last 24.
21-3 in the last 24 games with Alvarez. Has that just appeared in or catch? Is that games he's DH too?
So one of them or two of them he came in seventh inning or later.
Okay.
So if you want to take those out.
No, it's fine. Games that Alvarez has actually played, had an at bat, played in the game, the Mets are 21-3?
Yeah.
21-3. It's crazy. It's hard to fathom. Having him make that much of a difference with this team, but he clearly does. Even the numbers of the pitching staff. But Lindor is getting on base in the first inning. Both had doubles to lead off both of these games. I mean, he's just been dynamic. It's changed who they are. It's changed the first inning. It's changed who they are. Alvarez is obviously a huge thing. Vientos hitting home runs is a huge thing. Those are the three things that jump out at me are Alvarez, Lindor, and Vientos. Maybe you could put, I mean, at least right now, J.D. Martinez got this whole thing rolling, no doubt, with the home run and the walk-off home run against Miami and his hot streak and him talking up the meeting, because the meeting doesn't become the meeting until someone talks about how great the meeting was. Like, so the idea that he hits that walk-off home run and brings up the meeting, well, now we have a thing. So not only did he give them a point to turn to look at and say, hey, since this moment, we've done this. He also hit the big home run. He's been great. But I expect that from him. He's a professional hitter. He was never really awful this year. He wasn't really ever the problem of this team, where you felt like Lindor was a problem on this team. Right? Vientos Beatty was a problem on this team. Alvarez's injury was a problem on this team. And since those things have been answered in the affirmative, it's changed who they are. It's changed who they are. And Nimmo in these funks was a problem on this team. That's why they moved him out of the leadoff spot. And now him getting back into the swing of things has changed this team. Really, the one man out who hasn't really ever, you know, got it going here is Alonso. But I'm going to take a call from Matt, and I'm puzzled. I'm puzzled on what he wants to talk about. And then I see all the Yankee calls. More, you know, it's tonight is your night, bro. You just have to wait 2 minutes for it. Matt in Soho. What's up, Matt?
Hey, how's it going, Chris? Thanks for letting me call in tonight. Us guys that do overnight,
yes,
we love listening to you.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
I just want to say one thing. I know you say I'm a little puzzling, but this Mets bullpen is still depleted. The starting pitchers, you still can't trust them, so I still think we should be selling at the deadline here. You got to sell high on Alonso while he's hitting the ball.
He's not really hitting the ball all that great. He's not terrible, but he's not hitting the ball all that great.
You know, he's still getting it done a little bit there. Yeah. Not like, you know, McNeil or anything like that.
No, he's not been Jeff McNeil. What a selling point. Wait until you sell him. Hey, guys, you want to buy Alonzo? Well, really? He's not McNeil. See how that goes.
But yeah, he's not McNeil, yeah.
I think you're crazy. Why wouldn't you want to try and help those positions of weakness as the offense is killing it? You're out of the playoffs.
We are. We're a game out of playoffs. There's a lot of teams in front of us still.
No, there isn't.
Gotta remember.
No, there isn't.
Yeah.
There's not. There's San Diego. That's it. There's one team. There's one team ahead of you.
There's too many holes in this team right now. I'm wishing for the best. There's still a lot of holes. I don't know. You trust this bullpen right now?
No, of course I don't trust the bullpen. That's why I want to go out and trade for a couple of bullpen arms.
Yeah. I don't know. The starting rotation has been pretty good.
It's been fairly good. And thank you for the call. It's been pretty good. Severino's pitching great, right? He's the one guy really pitching well. Quintana's been up and down. Two good ones in a row, I believe, the last two. McGill, awful the last start. I think it hasn't been nearly as bad as people say it has been, but up and down, you know, mostly average with, you know, some really bad ones mixed in. Manaea's been okay, but yeah, you're right. If you get into a playoff series, right, if you get into a playoff series and you're – rotation is Sanga, Severino, and I don't know, Quintana, Manaea, Peterson, whatever third starter you want to place up there. Or it could be, obviously, Christian Scott. It could be Buto. It could be one of these guys that they... Yeah, and no, I think I said Sanga is the starter, as the number one pitcher. But
sorry, I was getting cursed at by a caller.
Oh, it's okay. Cool. Sounds good. Which one?
He's not getting on.
That's right. You call up my guy, you curse at Fliegelman, you don't get on. Everybody understand? But you go into a series with Atlanta, and they throw out, you know, Sale and Fried and Morton. Yes, okay. I get it. You go and get into a playoff series against Philadelphia with the best pitching staff in baseball. Sure, you don't match up starting pitching-wise, but the offense has been so damn good. And if Diaz could ever get back, you know, He could theoretically be the best reliever in all of baseball. That's what he was 2 years ago. I don't know if I'm expecting it necessarily, but, I mean, you do have that possibility. Go out and add a couple of bullpen arms. You're right. Right now, the bullpen's in disarray. I mean, I get it. Young, Nunez, like, these are the guys you're relying on. But I'd rather bolster them than sell when I'm a game out. I mean, you have to. I'm puzzled by that. I'm really puzzled by that. But what they've done, this run they're on, now you want to talk about selling? I know there was a thought, don't buy the fool's gold. That was fool's gold before this, man. This feels like real gold. Right now, if I wish I could make a meme of Billy Crystal in City Slickers 2. The hunt for Curly's gold or whatever it's called, and Billy Crystal is taking the butter knife to the gold bar at the end of the movie to prove it's real gold. Like, I feel like that's us all right now. We're all Billy Crystal scratching at the gold because it feels real right now. It doesn't feel like fool's gold. It doesn't feel like Fugazi gold. It feels real to me. This offense feels real to me right now. Even if it's not going to be this dynamic for the entire season, I still think it's pretty damn good. I don't know if Lindor is going to have a 600 on base percentage to start every game over the next month. Maybe not. But it still feels pretty damn good. And at the very least, I can't sell. I understand. I want to buy, I guess, because that's just in my nature when I'm one game out. I could understand sort of not doing that depending on what prospects you got to give up because you're about building prospects up. That's what this whole season was about. But man, oh man. I got to go for it. Maury and Belmore, tonight is your night, bro.
Tonight is your night. Ready for this?
I'm ready for it. Let's go.
Frederick Weiss.
Yes.
47 years old today. He was our first round.
Oh, today was his birthday? Today was his birthday?
No, I just looked him up. He's 47 years of age today. He was our number one draft pick. Can you imagine?
Yeah, what about Frank Ntilikina?
Oh, Ntilikina is another one.
There's another friend. That's the most recent French point.
Don't we learn to stay away from the French that they may not show up?
It was hard to stay away from the French in this draft. They have I think it was four French draft picks in the top.
You know, they gave us the Statue of Liberty. Doesn't mean we have to take Frederick Weiss. All right. So what happened with the Yankees is perfect. Let's see how they survive and they turn. This is the first turmoil they've had all year.
Like the Rangers, right? For you Ranger fans, you have to face a little adversity, right? You want to face adversity?
Yeah, sure.
Well, the Yankees are facing adversity.
Adversity is, yes, I call that. And then I just want to go back to what we talked about with the boys. I spent some time with my son yesterday and his friends. They're older.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we talked about how when they were kids, the same thing. Right? When you guys were kids, whatever they learned at school that day had an effect.
Yes.
The weather and where the mark,
all of a sudden,
I think that's exactly. Yeah. They must have went through something like that where they're learning about how, living and, throwing things out the window just doesn't make any sense.
What a
great story.
Yeah, no, it was a good story. He was very upset with the litter walking to Yankee Stadium. And he was like, who would do this? Like, he couldn't imagine. Meanwhile, I'm like, bro, I watched you eat popcorn at the kitchen table yesterday, and you left it all over the floor. You can't eat anything without making a mess, and yet you're wondering how someone threw a Poland Spring bottle on the floor and didn't pick it up? I mean, I understand our house isn't out in the world, but, like, you just drop crap all over the place and don't pick it up. How are you confused by this? Like, no joke. Everything is on the floor. I'm on my hands and knees cleaning up after you every time you eat. You could eat soup. I'm on my hands and knees. Everything. You eat nothing over the plate. And then you just get up and walk away. You don't even put your chair back in. You don't even tuck your chair back in. You're just gone. You're gone. It's all over the floor, but yet you're puzzled that there's a Poland Spring bottle on the floor outside of Yankee Stadium. And he was really like, who would do this? We have to pick it up. I'm like, I'm not picking it up. 888-808-1019. Yeah, they're crazy. And I mentioned today, too. Yeah, the other thing is he thinks two things with the kid that I need to work on with him. When I say not to do something, he thinks that if he has a reason for doing it, that he doesn't have to stop. Like if I say, all right, that's enough. Give me the tablet back. No, but I'm just finishing up this thing. I'm just finishing up this video, or I'm actually doing a math quiz or something. I'm like, stop telling me what I know what you're doing. I know there's a reason you're looking at it. I've said enough. But as long as there's a reason, he thinks that's okay to just disregard what I said. And then the other thing is, he thinks please is like, you can't say please 35 times. You've asked me. I said no. You said please once. I said no. 35 pleases. Like, how many pleases do you have to realize before no more pleases? Not going to help. Got to work on that. And as far as every parent I've ever talked to, they are so much better in school than they are at home. I don't understand it. I don't get it. I better stop right there before Brett calls me up and calls me a bad dad. I don't need it.